Hello and welcome to episode 354 of the UK True Crime Weekly podcast. I'm Adam. Thank you so much for taking the time to join me today for a story unfortunately familiar to us all. How for some people life is just about the accumulation of money and what it can buy. Our tale of greed today is from both the UK and from Spain. Just a quickie to say that if you get a moment, please do take a look at my blog at uktruecrime.com. This week I wrote about the joys and the challenges of running a 91,000 member True Crime Facebook group. If you get a chance, please do let me know your thoughts. Before we get started, let's set some context for today's story with our guest the month and year game. At number one on the UK charts was Meet Me Halfway from the Black Eyed Peas. In the US, top spot, it was Owl City with Fireflies. And in Australia, the top album this month was the greatest hits album from the Foo Fighters. A band I suggest, and people in the band as well, it's very, very hard not to like. In the news this month, my excitement was hard to contain as Jenson Button won the F1 Drivers' Championship after winning at Abu Dhabi. There was flooding in Jeddah, Saudi Arabia, as a powerful storm brought 3 years' worth of rain in 4 hours, killing over 150 people and sweeping thousands of cars away. It was terrifying. In Germany, international goalkeeper Robert Enker took his own life at just 32. And 5 British soldiers were shot dead in Afghanistan's Helmand province while mentoring and training the Afghan police force. 6 other British servicemen and 2 Afghan police were also injured in the attack, which the UK military blamed on a rogue policeman. Okay, so did you guess the month and year? It was November 2009. Oh well, there's always next week. We pick up the story today in 2009 in Mallorca, the largest of the Balearic Islands in the Mediterranean Sea off the east coast of Spain. It's a place where you may well have been, and many of us in the UK head off for a summer holiday with a range of different resorts to suit whatever you're looking for, from a quiet family resort to the rather different pleasures of Magaluf. There's also a large expat community, with many people from the UK making this their home for a number of reasons, but often due to the climate and the laid-back culture. One of these expats on Mallorca was Yorkshireman John Hurst, or Nice John as he was known, as, well, he was just so nice. Permatan John lived in an expensive villa with his wife Linda, which they'd spent almost £300,000 renovating to their exacting standards. And they enjoyed a fantastic lifestyle and had all the trappings of success, with many exotic holidays, designer clothes and jewellery, a luxury motorboat, of course, and 2 top-of-the-range cars, an open-top sports car for Linda and a top-of-the-range Mercedes for John. No clichés on this podcast. The couple married in Vegas, a trip that cost almost £100,000, and they honeymooned at one of the top hotels in the Seychelles after stopping en route at the Burj Al Arab Hotel in Dubai. Another $100,000 was spent on a reception in Mallorca for all their friends who hadn't made it to Vegas for the wedding. John was widely known in the local community and a member of pretty much every club where he could spend time socialising with the other wealthy people on the island, including the Mallorca Cricket Club, the Santa Ponsa Country Club, and the English Speakers Residents Association. Always impeccably dressed, John was charming, easygoing, and great company. It was not hard to see how he'd managed such success in the financial services sector, and he revelled in his reputation of being able to make his connections some seriously good money when they invested in his Gilha investment fund, which focused on the Dow Jones Index futures market. John was never shy in talking about how his fund produced much better returns than others, and among the expat community, there were a number of retired people with a pot of money they were looking to invest. Word of mouth took many of these people to John, and he was happy to make them a fantastic return on their investment. What was even more staggering about John's success was that when he'd arrived on the island just a few years before, he'd certainly been down on his luck. Living in a rented flat, he used his bike to travel to his shifts as a labourer. But this wasn't uncommon on an island like Mallorca, which attracted a number of people with colourful backgrounds, or backgrounds rather which were often complicated. Still, by 2009, John was clearly back on his feet, and life was good. It was very good. Hugh Ash was an investigative journalist living in Mallorca at the time. And although he'd never met John, he certainly knew of him, he knew his name. He was at a party, chatting with a friend, about a German con man who'd recently fled the island after offering a return on investment of 8% to customers, before being outed as a fraud. Another friend interrupted to say that 8% seemed particularly low. He knew that John Hirst was able to guarantee investors a return of 18% on their money with an additional 2% bonus. Hugh thought this figure was incredibly high, but to check his thinking, he rang his daughter, who was a senior banker in London. She confirmed what he had thought, saying, "Never in your wildest dreams, Dad. Nobody can consistently deliver that. Think about it. If someone's paying 20% a year, they have to be making up to 40% to cover their own profits, commissions and overheads. It's pure fantasy." Hugh was very uneasy with what he was hearing, as he'd reported on various Ponzi or pyramid schemes in the past, and this seemed to have all the hallmarks of one of those. Probably the most famous example in recent times is the one run by Bernie Madoff, which defrauded thousands of investors out of tens of billions of dollars over a period of 20 or so years. Putting the astronomical numbers to one side, the scheme run by Madoff and so many others was actually very, very simple. The figurehead is somebody who is wealthy, seems to be well connected, and very plausible, the credentials all look in place. This leads investors to trust them with their money, and they then see amazing returns and recommend them to their family and friends, who, seeing the success the referrers had, they also choose to invest, often without making the most basic of checks. Why do they need to? They've seen the money that's being made by the person that referred them. The monthly statements showing the success of their investments quickly allays any doubts, and it's not uncommon for people to invest all their life savings. And so the pyramid grows. But it is all a facade, as the person running the Ponzi scheme is using the new deposits to pay out the older investors, whilst taking a large proportion of the money for themselves to fund their own lifestyles. And if new investment dries up, and that's the problem, the whole scheme will collapse. And this is in simple terms what happened to Madoff in 2008, when the markets were in decline and more investors wanted their money returned than the money coming in from new investors. Back in Mallorca, Hugh Ash did some basic checks with the Financial Conduct Authority in the UK to see if John Hirst or the Gilher Fund were listed, which they obviously should have been. They weren't. They also weren't listed in the US with the Securities and Exchange Commission. And Hugh now was convinced that he was absolutely correct in his assessment. John Hirst, he was running a classic Ponzi scheme. And the looming financial crisis that caused Bernie Madoff's Ponzi scheme to fail was also causing major issues for John Hirst. This impending financial crisis meant that new investments were drying up, and investors were starting to ask, why were their regular payments not coming through on time, if at all? John knew that everything he had built was on the verge of crashing down, so he left the island and headed back to the UK in August 2009. But John was in no mood to admit his fraud. Instead, he told how his wife was seriously ill, which is why they'd returned to the UK, and he assured investors that their money was safe, and as soon as they liquidated their company, the money would be returned. It's another classic scheme from the Ponzi scammer. Playing for time, playing for sympathy, all these things delaying the inevitable. Many of these investors may not have bought this story quite so easily. Were they aware that before he left Spain, Hirst had cheaply sold off both cars and had his house valued, with a view to selling it and pocketing the 1 million plus equity in the property? But of course, behind the headlines of these scams are the ruins of people's lives, who have lost money they can't afford to lose. And a friend of Hugh Ashes was one of those. Hugh says the following of this meeting with the friend, let me quote directly. Janet arrived, sat on the sofa, and somehow remained rational enough to say, I think I've been stupid and might have lost 200,000 euros in an investment fund. Clutched in her hand was a file of papers relating to a fund called Gilher Inc., managed by a John Hurst and based in the Seychelles, a location that filled me with little confidence and rekindled all my earlier suspicions about Nice John. In his introductory letter, Hurst claimed to have long experience in financial services, was semi-retired, but still played the markets with consistent success. Friends and family placed money with him, and now he was prepared to put his expertise at the service of others. The letter stated, I trade movements on the Dow Jones Index rather than buying individual shares, using technical analysis to give me a feel for which way the market is moving. While the system is not an exact science, it works sufficiently well to enable me to guarantee a 20% return per annum to clients. This is made up by a 1.5% per month and a year-end bonus of 2%, provided the original investment continues. The minimum investment is £10,000 or the euro-US dollar equivalent. Despite her outward calm, continued Hugh, Janet's stoicism was fading as I scanned the simple contract, as Hurst described it, before trousering her cash. The deal had been struck 5 months earlier, in June, but she'd received only two monthly interest payments, totaling 6,000 euros. Janet had been introduced to Hurst by another man living in Mallorca, a man called Richard Pollitt, who was a British accountant and financial advisor. And it seemed he'd introduced many other new clients to Hurst. They moved in the same social circles. Hugh took time to meet Pollitt, who told him that his wife had invested with Hurst, as has his daughter. He told how he'd introduced a number of clients to Hurst, who had invested up to about 12 million euros with him. And when Hugh told him that he found the figures of 20% per annum just ridiculous, he said, you don't know John, and it's possible. Hugh left the meeting incredulous at how a successful and experienced financial advisor could possibly hold this view. Once Janet had left Hugh's house, firmly believing she would never see her money again, Hugh again looked at the paperwork, and he was struck by the sheer amateur nature of it. There was no letterhead, no company registration, and nothing about who the financial services company was regulated by. Now that Hugh's suspicions about Hurst were confirmed, he got down to trying to track him down. Working with some of the other investors who also feared that their savings had gone for good, Hugh managed to find a UK phone number for Linda Hurst, which was in her maiden name of Waite, and this was located in the Byfleet area of Surrey. Nobody answered the phone initially, but this was to prove a crucial lead. Hugh tracked down another Brit, Billy Morris, who did jobs for Hurst around his villa, and he opened by, as so many people did, speaking about what a great bloke and top friend Hurst had been to him. Nobody seemed to have a bad word to say about Hurst. As Hugh had hoped, it was Billy who had arranged for Hurst's personal possessions to be transported back to Dover and then onwards in the UK. Billy was unsure about the details, just recalling it was going to a yellow self-storage place about 2 hours from the coast. But the name Byfleet did ring a bell with him. You know, sometimes investigation isn't complex and difficult, and a simple Google search on self-storage in Byfleet led Hugh to the big yellow storage unit in the town. It seemed that Hugh had located where the Hurst's goods were, including his bundle of papers, with details of the clients that he'd scammed. With the information he'd uncovered and with his contacts in the UK media, Hugh managed to persuade the Sunday Telegraph to publish a piece on John Hurst. But first he phoned his contacts at the Serious Fraud Office in London, who were very interested and wanted to know everything that Hugh had on him. And on Friday the 12th of November, the Serious Fraud Office contact phoned Hugh to say they'd uncovered her stuff at the storage facility, and there was some seriously interesting material that they had found. 2 days later, the Sunday Telegraph published their story about Hearst and the desperate plight of the investors. Reporters there had discovered that Hearst had first returned to his home in Woking, Surrey, before heading north to Yorkshire, where his solicitor said he was receiving treatment for leukaemia. As is so often the case, once there is publicity, other people come forward with information about a criminal. And you won't be surprised to hear that this was the case with Hearst, who had previously spent time in prison for fraud. A week later, the Sunday Telegraph revealed the details in a splash which was headlined, "Mallorca-based British financier investigated by SFO, convicted of offence in the 1990s. In this instance, it was another really poor confidence scam by Hearst, with this time his target being Yorkshire miners, who'd received redundancy pay after the closure of their mines. Working as a salesman for Allied Dunbar, he had defrauded miners out of £211,000, for which he was sent to prison for 2.5 years, serving 30 months of that sentence. Soon the Serious Fraud Office began an investigation into the scheme called Operation Noble, alongside West Yorkshire and Surrey Police. Hearst was questioned by the SFO, and in April 2011, he was charged with conspiracy to defraud and money laundering. His wife Linda, her daughter Zoe, and Hearst's son Daniel, a lawyer, were charged with money laundering too. In Mallorca, Pollitt was extricated to the UK and charged with conspiracy. John Hearst pleaded guilty ahead of the trial, and the other four defendants faced trial at Bradford Crown Court. The court heard that the scam, which was led by John Hearst and Pollitt, had attracted investment of over £10 million, and of that amount, £4.7 million had been stolen from the investors. But the prosecutor confirmed that Hearst only had available assets worth about £650,000, so the judge agreed to make a formal compensation order against Hearst, and he was given 6 months to pay the sum and was warned he faced another 4 years in jail if the cash was not handed over. 64-year-old John Hearst was sentenced to 9 years in prison for conspiracy to defraud and 2 counts of money laundering. Richard Pollitt and Linda Hearst were also found guilty. 70-year-old Richard Pollitt was sentenced to 6.5 years for conspiracy to defraud, and 62-year-old Linda Hearst was given 2.5 years on 3 counts of money laundering and 1 count of evading a liability by deception. Linda's daughter and John's son were acquitted of all charges against them. The judge turned to John Hearst and said, "You wanted it all. Get rich quick. You had the greed and desire for the high life which overcame all morality." He told Hearst and Pollitt, "You are through and through common criminals. What you did, and what makes this case of the utmost gravity, was brutal, callous and cruel. You are corrupt. This was an appalling and shocking course of conduct in which so many were targeted and so many have, in effect, had the remainder of their lives shattered and ruined." Sentencing Linda Hearst, the judge said, "You did, from June 2006 onwards, enjoy the most incredible high standards of living, jet-setting here and there, cruises here and there, and of course, Mr. Hearst liberally showered you with money and jewels." Speaking after the sentencing, Charles Dewey of Somerset, who used to live in Mallorca and was a victim of the Ponzi fraud, said that he and his family are having to start life again, much in the manner of a student. "We have nothing left," he said. "We are on benefits. We are starting out again." The investment was £300,000. Some of it we got back as income, but we were never expecting to lose that capital. "I think they are evil. I think I can speak of the other 120 investors. They've gone to a vulnerable group, not big companies," added Charles. So what do you make of what we've heard today? Money makes people do funny things, doesn't it? We hear that all the time on this podcast. But there is something about investment scams that both intrigue me and depress me at the same time. In this story today, we've heard how people who are normally thorough in their diligence about all matter of things in their lives were happy to invest huge sums with Hearst, despite not even making the most basic of checks. Why was this? Well, we all like getting one over the establishment, don't we? with the banks in the UK at the moment outrageously, in my view, not raising interest rates, whilst making huge profits by raising the interest rates on mortgages immediately, the current situation is ripe for people looking for investments outside the mainstream. It's always the way, I guess. And the second point is trust. If someone you know and trust is making a great return on their investment with someone who you know or you think is a financial legend, why would you also not invest your funds with them? And this is what con artists like Hearst rely on. By displaying wealth and building trust, he knows that there are always people looking for something more from their money. But with this case in particular, what really bothers me is that Hearst was able to scam those people who called him a friend. Those people he spent a lot of time with and socialised with. How can you do that? How can you look people in the face when you know you're doing that? But it appeared that in his earlier fraud, when he scammed the miners, he even ripped off a member of his own family. Can we be generous and say that he had the view that the Ponzi scheme could never fail? And he could continue to make good money for his friends and for himself, of course? Or did he just not care? Not care about ruining the lives of others? Hearst, his wife Linda, and their co-plotter Pollitt are out of prison now, able to live their lives freely after just a short time inside. But what of all those people whose lives they destroyed, in some cases having to totally rebuild their finances later in life? For them, the nightmare of Hearst and Pollitt and what they did will be with them forever. Thank you so much for joining me for this episode of the UK True Crime Podcast. To discuss this story and any other aspect of UK true crime, please head to Facebook and join over 91,000 of us who talk UK true crime 24/7 every single day of the year. Why don't you take a look today? And to support this show, please do head to Patreon for bonus episodes and loads of other exclusive content. A new full-length bonus episode is due to drop this week, so why don't you join and listen to that? A huge thank you to the latest members of this community, that's David East and Emily. Your support is much appreciated. You can join our community at patreon.com/UKTrueCrime, and you'll help me continue to release free weekly content. Okay, so that's all from me, the host of the UK's 37th most popular true crime podcast, and the only podcast of a town is Rucksack, and the Kings of Leon, never ever playing on my headphones, goodness gracious, no. What would I rather listen to? Most things. So until we speak again next week on Tuesday, please do take it easy and remember, despite the others, it's always the others, we know that. Stay classy. Cheerio for now.